Hey, what up? Welcome in. Doug Gottlieb. This is All Ball, the All Basketball Podcast all the time. And you can listen to the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays, 3 to 6 Eastern Time, 12 to 3 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio or foxsportsradio.com. You can stream us or the iHeartRadio app. Let's we'll get to name and likeness stuff in a second. We'll get to the G League deal in a second. I want to give a quick kind of synopsis review of episodes 3 and 4 of The Last Dance. The Dennis Rodman thing is interesting. I mean, it appears at this time as though they're not going to talk about Jordan's gambling, which, you know, and whether or not that caused him to have to, you know, if he's suspended from the league, that was the old rumor, which I don't believe to be true. But I think that by not talking about it, I think it's a hard deal, right? If you talk about it, you validate it as, well, this is a legitimate rumor out there. But if you don't talk about it, now it's, well, hold on. Are you not talking about it because you're shying away from it because you're going to say something that's a lie, that's a provable lie? Whereas if you just don't bring it up, you hope that it goes away? It's very difficult. But the third and fourth episodes, they give you a lot more Dennis Rodman and a lot more Phil Jackson. Let me start with Rodman. And I don't know, obviously, like the Rodman personality stuff is interesting. And the trip to Vegas, I actually think speaks more to Phil. And it is something that Pat Riley would do, but kind of differently than the way Phil did it. There's some similarities there. But the Rodman thing's amazing because I don't know if we'll have a guy like that. I mean, the idea that you have two players on this team, you know, that when they won 72 games, you're talking about the, you know, at the time, the greatest team in the history of the sport. One in Scottie Pippen, who was an equipment manager at an NAIA school. And Dennis Rodman, who's a from nowhere Southeast Oklahoma State guy. Like this, it's incredible. Rodman, of all the guys who I think all three of Jordan, Pippen, Rodman, their games would absolutely translate to today. Kukoc would as well, by the way. Kukoc would as well. We can talk about Jordan's three-point shooting or whatever, but if you take people out of the lane the way they do now, and especially early in Jordan's career where you could not keep him in front of you. You couldn't. And was his, you know, like his last year, he shot 28% from three. But it's just such a hard comparison because just the volume of practice takes and makes are so different. Jordan did shoot a low line drive, but I mean, look, he wasn't a great shooter when he entered the league and he made himself into the best perimeter shooter. Then he made himself into the best post scorer. And he was always a walking bucket. So you want to say he was never a great 3-point shooter and so he wouldn't be a great 3-point shooter today. Brooke Lopez made himself into a 3-point shooter. Why couldn't Michael Jordan, right? Scottie Pippen would be a great hybrid player. I mean, imagine Scottie Pippen at the 1 through 4 right now, which is kind of what he did. But then the Dennis Rodman thing, like, look, what makes Draymond Green special is he could guard positions 1 through 5. That was Dennis Rodman. Now, would he have gotten overpowered by Shaq? Sure. Absolutely. Everybody be overpowered by Shaq. But now there aren't Shaqs. And the way in which the game is played now, I mean, that guy would be as, or even, yeah, honestly, maybe even more successful. Granted, couldn't score and not really a roll to the rim, throw it up to him, finish guy. But if you watch tape of Dennis Rodman when he played with the Detroit Pistons and, you know, when he played with the Bulls, the ability to guard 5 positions, he was way ahead of the Draymond Greens of this world in being a small ball 5. So I'm obviously a huge Rodman fan. Like I think he is a profoundly impactful player. And to anyone who it's like, look, I know Draymond somehow has become this version of Rodman. Draymond's far better off the court, right? In terms of does not have nearly the issues of Rodman, but he's also far less effective on the basketball floor. There's a reason that everywhere Rodman went in the NBA, they won. And maybe not the Mavericks late in his career, but for the most part, everywhere they went, won. Because he competed, he could really, really rebound. He knew his role. He was an egoless player on offense, and just a tenacious rebounder, defender, and could guard any position on defense. I mean, kind of really amazing. A good fit, maybe not the perfect fit, but a good fit for how the Bulls played and their ability to manage him, which brings you to Phil Jackson. And I do think that, Phil, the triangle gets, maybe it's because people don't understand it. They haven't seen it implemented. I'm a believer that a lot of guys that broadcast the NBA, they have some sort of, obviously, you know, Van Gundy and Mark Jackson, maybe not as much so, but a lot of them don't have the desire to give credit to coaching and coaching spacing, because that's what the offense is really about. If you're listening to All Ball, you're a basketball guy, you know that you might know a little bit about the triangle. The triangle, though, the way that Tex Winter would implement it is really a mindset, in that you never come between closer than 15 to 18 feet to a teammate unless you're going to screen for them or unless you're cutting, right? And so you learn that when you warm up and you spread out in lines, every line is 15 to 18 feet from each other. And when you walk out, the next guy doesn't go until you're 15 to 18 feet. So you're just constantly getting it pounded into your head, this is how far I stay away from teammates. And the idea is, if help comes, if a double team comes, you have a perfectly spaced teammate to make the easy pass to him and a clear read so that he can catch and shoot the basketball. And that's what worked for the Bulls. That's what worked for Jordan. Jordan was not as skilled a passer, obviously, as Magic or Bird or LeBron, but they made the reads so very easy for him. And then the other players, you know, figured out where they were supposed to be and what shots they were supposed to work on. And that's how Paxson, in their first NBA Finals, and B.J. Armstrong and Steve Kerr and you name it, how all of those shooters end up finding the right spot, the right space where they could step in and fire and make so many shots to help create those one-on-one opportunities for Michael Jordan. Look, I'm a Jordan is the greatest of all time guy. I knew this documentary would kind of cement it in most people's minds, especially so many people who had never seen him play. There will be Team Jordan guys and Team LeBron guys. I do think we can appreciate both. But Jordan was even more of an assassin, even more of a killer, much more explosive by my estimation early in his career than Kobe Bryant was. And then his footwork, his skill, honestly, his coachability, all of these things combined with ending what I believe was his true basketball career on a game winner on the road in Utah. That's the greatest basketball player I've ever seen. And I think they're doing a good job of telling that story and telling some of the backstories and telling some of Phil's backstories. But I don't know if they're explaining well enough what made Rodman so good, what made Phil so good, or that Scottie Pippen, when he first, the first couple years, he was seen as soft, right? Like the migraine thing was a big thing to overcome. But I think the overall, the doc has been outstanding. It does remind you of how great this team was. It does tell you things about how dysfunctional it was that we didn't know about. And there are some missing parts to it where I think they do so to control the narrative for what you remember about Jordan and what you remember about the Bulls. All right, let me get to the NIL, right? The name, image, and likeness discussion, as well as the G League discussion. Look, I've played minor league basketball. There's no podcast I don't believe that exists with a guy who has more experience in minor league basketball. True minor league basketball sucks. And it doesn't suck because the players suck. Like, I've never played against better competition than I played against when I was in the ABA, for example. Right, Derek Martin was the point guard of the Vegas team. Sed Zabalos was on it. They just had dude after dude. And you're like, these guys are all NBA players. But they played in the ABA 2000 because they didn't want to have hefty buyouts. They just want to play, stay fresh, stay ready for a call-up. This is before the G League really took, was the D League, and before it kind of took hold of everything, because he had to sign a three-year contract. He didn't make any money, and there was a huge buyout. But no one wants to be there. They just want to be in the NBA, which you could sit there and you could tell me, hey, most college basketball players want to make it to the NBA, but the lack of buy-in to anything team Like, what are we teaching guys? I find it ironic, the juxtaposition of why Jordan became Jordan. And the story that's always been told is, hey, the only guy to hold Jordan below 20 points is Dean Smith. When the truth is that had Dean Smith just let him go, he wouldn't have developed as good a footwork. He wouldn't have developed the buy-in defensively, the mental and emotional toughness. Would the competitiveness have been there? Like, yeah, you either have that or you don't. But Michael Jordan was always about winning, but then he went to a program where they won, and it was kind of a winning mindset. I think that's valuable, and we do stupid shit because we think, well, somehow the man gets over on the kid. Like, that ain't true. It's just not. Now, look, if you're going to get $500,000 for your son and he's going to go right to the NBA and he's going to make life-changing money and maybe make some more ready-made product, but I think we're skipping steps here. We're skipping steps. It's like kind of, you know, if you ever made a recipe and can you put all the stuff in the bowl and sometimes it comes out the same? Sure. But there's a reason that they say, you know, beat the eggs first and then you make, because that is time-tested and it works. Does Roy Williams run NBA sets? Nope. But you know what? You go and play for Roy Williams and get to be around a college campus. You get to be around, you know, girls your age. You buy into a team. You're into a basketball family. A lot of these kids, now some of these kids have great families that they come from and they're not making bad decisions, but it gives you a basketball family. Like, if you can get into the North Carolina, the Duke or UCLA, Kansas basketball family, you're made for life. And we just blow that shit off. We're like, oh, that's a waste of time. Like, no, it's not. No, it's not. I mean, if you don't think the Duke family takes care of the Duke family. That's why they're all on TV. That's why they're all coaching. They take care of each other. That's what a family does, right? And we just pretend like that shit doesn't matter. We pretend like these coaches who understand how to coach fundamentals. Oh, it doesn't matter. They're not coaching NBA sets. And okay, you can learn that stuff. You can clearly learn. What you can't go back and teach is the little things. And we do this dumb deal where we speeded up the process and we publicize the sped up. And we don't look, if you want the baseball model, I don't think that's good for college basketball. I don't think that's good for basketball players. Obviously, there's a difference in contract, but like baseball players that you don't get paid until your fourth or fifth year as a major league baseball player. You want a minor league system? Lots of guys wash out of the minor league system, which is fine. Guys wash out of college, but when they wash out of college, they end up with a college degree. That's the difference. And when they wash out of college, they still have made some great memories for themselves and a name for themselves because they played in an NCAA tournament or played for a major institution, as opposed to washing out in the minor leagues and you don't make anything for yourself. The name, image, and likeness thing, I actually think the programs that can help the most are the new high majors that are really mid majors, Xavier's and Wichita State and you know, Gonzaga is a high major now, but those smaller schools in bigger cities who own the town, that's where kids are going to do well.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Andy Katz, check him out on the March Madness website, on his Twitter handle. He's got great, great stuff, his own podcast as well. Andy, let's start with the G League thing, because I do think that's a more of an immediate sort of issue with college basketball specifically. First, what's your thoughts on Sharif Abdur-Rahim and this plan on having a G League select team, which so far, I believe by my count, there's at least three of the top 20 players in high school basketball, which intend to play for him.
A couple things, Doug. First of all, I want to see, are they just working out with this team? Are they a part of the G League? Are they really competing as an independent team within the G League? If they're just doing their own thing and they're getting paid and they're working out, that's great. That's great for them. I don't see any reason to think that college basketball is in any kind of serious trouble, because I firmly believe that, and I'm not saying this because of who I work for in different entities, The reality is, whenever the one-and-done rule changes by the NBA, and I think at some point it will, these players weren't coming to college anyway. And look at this year's top group of players. He wouldn't have been in this kind of situation. You know, he was a three-year guy, sat out a year, developed into a lottery-type pick. The seniors that led their teams that had great years were upperclassmen. You know, Luka Garza Jr., Marcus Howard, Miles Powell, Cassius Winston, all these players that had great college careers. I didn't lack Kamar Baldwin. I didn't think there was any, lack of drama, excitement, entertainment that we saw this past season. So I think it's a little bit sky is falling. And I also want to wait and see how much money is the NBA, G League, Sharif, whoever, going to shell out. Is it for 5-10 guys? Okay. Is it for 25 to 30 to 40? I kind of question that. And you and I think we're on the same page. I still say once we're up and running at a, you know, sort of a normal, situation again in this country, and you've got all the exposure of the NCAA tournament and the season of being on television all the time, I think that ultimately benefits you in dollars more than playing in a long term of your career. In sort of obscurity in the G League.
Yeah, my issue, I think, though, is that it's not with the five guys or however many guys go and play in this team. It's with the 100 kids who think they're going to play on that team, right? Like, that becomes the issue. It's the same problem they had really before they had the one-and-done rule, was it wasn't just the kids that would leave from high school to go to the pros. It was the kids that weren't selected, that didn't do the work academically, right? And then there's the second part to it. And, like, I guess we're not supposed to feel bad for college basketball coaches, but, you know, Mick Cronin gets the job a year ago at UCLA, and his staff told me, like, Deshaun Nix is the first guy that they wanted, right? The most important recruit they could get is go and get the best point guard in the country who's in Las Vegas. They move mountains to get in that, and they got him, and they recruited based upon getting him as a point guard. Now you get to April, almost May, and he's like, yeah, I know I signed my letter of intent, but I'm not coming. Like, it totally changes how you recruit.
Yeah, and then obviously Michigan went through that with Todd as well. Invested a lot of time and effort, and they don't get him. But I also think, and this, you know, global crisis that we're in isn't going to go away. I mean, hopefully it goes away sooner or later medically, but economically it's not going to go away anytime soon. So I just question this, you know, alleged slush fund that we're sort of going to have for all these players.
And no, so, no doubt. No doubt. I mean, I don't know how many.
I'm being a little bit of a skeptic here. I'll just wait and see if all this money is out there for the, you know, all these guys. You're right. A lot of players will think they can do that, and ultimately, I question whether or not beyond the top 10, it'll really be there.
Yeah, and you know, will it be just one team? Will they have multiple teams? I'm with you. Like, look, Major League Baseball is cutting, I think it's like 40 or 41 minor league teams. Like, just in the business of sports, the G League teams are money losers before Gatorade came in. And at some point, you know, it's like, yeah, you know, I don't know how much red ink you want. And then you factor in, we are going to be in some sort of recession, whether it's short-lived or long-term. And when you're trying to dig yourself out of a financial hole and you have people in the front office who've been taking pay cuts or been furloughed, you know, who are actually who have jobs that help make money for NBA teams, they are essential personnel, along with the players. You know, those players aren't taking a pay cut. Are you going to is the NBA going to fund a money loser? Right? So, like, look, the NBA, one of the reasons that they've gotten out of most of the WNBA business was the owners are like, it's a money loser, no thanks. You know, like, I'm already losing money on a day-to-day on my NBA team. I don't need to lose money on a WNBA team that I don't even want to go to the games to. Now you want to lose money on a G League team, one G League select team. And, oh, yeah, by the way, then there's the what are the players actually getting out of it playing inconsequential games where winning isn't really valued, simply development is. That becomes interesting. Okay, and now we shift to the
one thing, Doug. Just look, put a ball on this. We should point out that Greg Brown, player from Austin, decided to go to Texas. So it's not everybody, and there will be players like that that hey want to play for their school and make an impact, even if it's for one season.
Well, that's really my thing is it's not even just one season. It's like, look, if Greg Brown goes to Texas and one, he doesn't play well, he can come back to Texas for 4 or 5 years, right? If Greg Brown goes to Texas and everything goes well and he's a one and done, and then he goes to the NBA draft when his career is over and he wants to work, he has something outside of just basketball to do so. This idea that guys are going to go like, we'll pay for your education. What makes you think any of those guys would value education that they would go? Like, just because Sharif did, like, look, Sharif's a brilliant guy. Went back to school, got his bachelor's, got his master's after being a one and done. He's a bright guy, but he is the exception, not the norm. This idea that, well, you can always go back and get your education. Get the fuck out of here. You can't get into any of these schools on your own. No, none of us can get into these colleges on our own. All right. Like, you think those guys can, the kid can get into Michigan without Michigan basketball helping him? No, it's an almost impossible school to get into. So we do have people living in a little bit of a fantasy world in terms of what happens when you're done playing or if you're not as good a player as you think you are. I don't blame a kid if he's like, you know, I don't really want to go to college and I get $500,000. And I understand it if that's what you're in the sport for, because you just want to be professional. I think you're missing out on a lot of really cool stuff. But okay, if that's your only goal, just understand there isn't the safety net that college provides. It's a great safety net for almost everybody. I don't think it hurts players. All right, I know your time is a little short, so let me ask you about the name and likeness. You know, look, there are going to be people that take shots at the fact that there's going to be caveats to it. Who do you think can and will endorse these kids?
So I think there's benefits small college towns, or maybe not using the word small, but colleges that dominate their town, like a Lexington, Kentucky, like a Louisville, Kentucky. You know, you're not supposed to use it as a recruiting inducement, but
if you go to Lexington on a recruiting weekend and the guy who's your host goes and does an appearance and gets a couple grand cash in his pocket, I think that's a pretty good recruiting inducement.
Yes. But if you want to advertise for Lexington Ford under the way this is described, if it all goes through, then you can. I just still get back to this. And we were moving this direction. I think it's the right thing to do, but I also really question the dollars. I just wonder how much money is out there. There'll be some, and some players will get some, but I just don't think it's going to be what people envision. There may be more dollars to be made in social media, something that I'm trying to understand even more and more through Instagram and the way people can be influencers and stuff like that. That might be where more of the money is made in your world in this new generation than it is in just straight advertising places. But I will tell you, there are certain places. Go to Chicago, all right, where if you're in Chicago, there are very few Bears, Bulls, Blackhawks, you know, Cubs and White Sox that do ads, let alone anyone from DePaul, Northwestern, even regionally Illinois. So, Boston, same thing. New York, same thing. So a lot of these pockets around the country, L.A., you know, it'd be very good. Tell me, if you're in L.A., how many people really know all the players from USC and UCLA? They don't. Yet they obviously know the Lakers and the Clippers and the Dodgers. But, it's going to be really hard for those schools in pro-dominated markets to get those kind of endorsements.
Yeah, I also think that, if you're a Nike school, you can't do an Adidas thing, right? So I do wonder if you can actually even do the competing car ads if there's an official car dealer of the school or of the program, right? So you're like, and then like there, then there's the elephant in the room is the taxes. You know, like right now you operate in a tax-free shelter. But endorsements is not, that's not a tax-free shelter.
Well,
many a guy has
gone. The athletic director from Ohio State on the call on Wednesday made that very clear when he answered a question. He's on this committee. And he said student athletes will be accountable to the IRS.
Yeah, it is a bag of worms. It's a whole new world. Yeah. And I'm not, you know, I don't fault a player, you know, like when I was at Oklahoma State, we went down to Christ's University Spirit and we had to do security, but it was a legal deal and you get a little bit of money. I like the idea that you can work with kids and coach basketball and get paid there, work kids out, which frankly I did when I was in college, right? $50 an hour or whatever, and you work a kid out. Like those type of things are legitimate. It's the stuff that we all know is illegitimate. But maybe this takes away from the coaches feeling like kids, like, hey, we're not buying kids anymore. If you're really any good, our boosters will take care of you. It's a fascinating, fascinating whole new world. Last thing, how important is it for the college football season to be played during their normal window as to not usurp college basketball season next year?
It's important, but I will say that I think a worst case scenario is the college basketball season gets pushed by a few weeks. March Madness can move. All parties agree to it because this year is just going to be different. It's not ideal, but it can move. And I will say, I'll go on record, I'm convinced we will have a season. We will have a tournament in 2021. How many games? I don't know yet, but I'm very convinced that we will have one.
Awesome stuff. Katsy, thank you again.
Thanks, Doug.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific.
Let's get with Jeff Goodman from Stadium. Jeff, how many guys are they actually going to have on this G League select team?
I think they want five. I think the ideal number is five, but, you know, again, they got to convince the right guys to make the jump. I thought Nix was obviously a big one for them because not only did you get him, but you took him from UCLA. And to me, he's one of the more entertaining players to watch because he just makes people better. And that's kind of what you want out of that program. You're going to want to sell the fact that, hey, here's a guy when he gets drafted, which I don't know where he'll get drafted, you know, a year and a half from now, but I think you could sell the fact that look at his IQ, look at what we did for him. Even if they didn't do much, they could sell the fact that this kid is ready from an IQ standpoint to play at the next level.
Yeah, I guess my you know, so it's not the five guys they select. It's the, and then maybe not this year, but in coming years, it becomes how many kids think they're one of those five guys they're going to select, and does that then? Because that's really the issue with all of this stuff, right? The top five guys that went straight from high school to the pros. It was everybody else. It was never the top five one and dones. It was all these other kids. That's one of the things that's created this transfer culture. Like, if you're not leading your team in scoring or shots as a freshman, you got to transfer because as a one, you should be a one and done. Like, that's really kind of what's at issue here. So are they going to officially cap it at a number? Like, do you know what the actual plan is?
We don't know, but listen, to go back to your point, I thought it is interesting because, you know, years ago, before they went with the one and done rule and you had kids going straight out of high school to college, I look back and, you know, seven or eight guys, there weren't that many that declared towards the end of that thing. But now our culture is so different than it was in 2003, four, with social media and everything else that you're right. You could be looking at 30 or 40 kids to try to make the jump, and you've got to have something in place to me to allow them to at least go back, you know, go to college, even if they make a mistake or what they think is a mistake, and go this route. But I just, Doug, my big question to you and the thing I've been racking my brain for is, why is Adam Silver doing this? Is he doing this to make the G League relevant or the G League program relevant? Is he doing it because he honestly was upset that RJ Hampton and LaMelo Ball went overseas? Is he doing it because he thinks this is a better avenue to prepare kids than college? What is it?
I do think that it was the, we got to travel over to Australia to see a couple of kids play when we should have our own developmental program here, right? And I don't, like, what's interesting to me is that kind of buried in this whole thing is the fact that the players and the owners could not agree on getting rid of the one and done rule. The owners like the one and done rule. They want guys to go to college because otherwise, you know, you make a mistake and, you know, anybody you draft, at some point you're going to have to play, and owners, you know, they expect you to play that guy early on. And some of these guys are just not ready. And, you know, maybe this is, I just, this is trying to please everybody.
Don't players like you too, Doug? Don't players like you?
Yes.
Because if you're an older player, you don't
want more guys taking your jobs.
Coming in the league taking your job?
Yes. And they also realize those guys are just not ready. Like, it's the both. Not only are they taking jobs, but they're also taking jobs before they're even close to being ready. Right? Even
so
even close.
My take to you could be.
But remember, like, that
Adam
was not
Silver
going.
Doing this. Is he doing this because he realizes he screwed up a couple years ago by saying, all right, we're going to push this back to high school, to NBA. And then he thought it through, and he got some feedback. And everybody's kind of like, hey, you know what? Maybe nobody really wants this. So let's try something different. And this is kind of an alternative to it to make sure then, all right, after a year in this G League program, they're more ready to play in the NBA.
Yes, which I guess you're okay with. Like, look, all of this stuff is great, but what's really – there's so many things that college basketball provides that you cannot artificially create. You just can't.
Yep.
And, you know – one, I want to see a guy dominate people at his age. I don't want to see him playing. I like the idea of playing against men, but I don't have, you know, you can play against college men as well. Are the college systems, is it the same game? Like, no. And I do think the NCAA has hurt itself by putting restrictions on how much time a kid can spend with his basketball coach, which is crazy, right? Because, like, on one hand, the same people who want this to happen are the same people who go, if you didn't have a 20-hour rule or the 8-hour rule in the off season, they'd be like, well, these kids are just abused. Like, their kids are in the gym all day regardless. The only question is, can a coach be in there with them?
The best part of it, Doug, is that Sharif Abdul-Rahim, who runs the G League and is out there trying to pluck kids from college, his son is going to Virginia next year as a freshman and a really good player. But why are you not bringing your son to this program if it's better than college?
Well, I don't think he thinks it's better. I don't think he thinks it's better than college. And Sharif's an interesting one, right? He was a one and done, but he went back, got his degree, got his master's degree. Like, he benefited greatly from it. I don't think he obviously loves the college system. There's a ton of hypocrisy to it. There just is. What do you think the new name and likeness rule changes anything? Does it? What is it? It's going to change something. What does it change?
Well, we don't know. I mean, all they've done right now is said, all right, you know, they can get endorsements, third-party endorsements. They can set up their own businesses. They can do things of that nature. But they haven't put any details, anything to it yet. And I think that's going to be the key. You know, my thought going forward was like, okay, what happens? You're a head coach, Doug, and you're a head coach at, you know, down the road there at LMU or something like that. And I run an auto dealership, and I got a ton of money, and I'm a booster. I'm your boy, right? Why can't you just tell me, hey, can you do me a favor? The number one player in the country, can we offer him $1 million? And we're gonna run this. We're gonna dominate LMU again. We're gonna be back like the old days, and we're gonna pay for kids. Well, how is the NCAA gonna stop that? Where are they gonna decide is too much? Are they gonna cap it? Is that allowed? If you're a coach, can you? I mean, I just think
and for people who say like, well, you can cap it. And one of the statements was, you know, like, it's got to be a reasonable amount. Remember the last time they tried to cap something in the NCAA was when they had the restricted earnings coach, and of course, those guys had a class action lawsuit. And it was a disaster. They lost a bunch of money. Yeah, I don't know what you do. I do know that then, you know, you can't have kind of conflicting brands. So does that mean if a car dealership is the official car dealership of the program, well, then you can't do a car dealership ad with any other car dealership, right? You can only do with that
one. Correct. That's right.
I mean, so
that's right. So there's going to be certain stipulations, and a lot of them. And the NCAA could not answer any of that this morning on a call because they haven't figured that out. I think what they were trying to do today was, hey, listen, everybody, we're moving forward with this. We're okaying some level of getting paid for your name, image, likeness. We're not sure of the details. We still got to figure that out. Well, that's the hard part, to be honest.
Does it decrease cheating in college basketball?
I don't think so. I mean, again, I don't think it changes it at all. I think, you know, you're going to have, again, coaches trying to circumvent the rules. I'll give you a good example. If I'm a head coach in college who maybe played in the NBA, and I'm at a mid-major level, I'm not going to say the name, there's a few of them out there,
well, we can say the name, Terry Porter, Damon Stoudemire, Danielle Marshall. They're at Portland. Terry Porter's fighting for his job right now at Portland. He's got, I don't know how many million dollars in the bank. Why can't he just say, hey, you know what? I want to keep coaching. I'm going to slip a half a million to my buddy who's running that car dealership, and he in turn is going to basically offer it. And I'm going to say to this recruit, hey, once you get on campus, you got a half a million dollar deal waiting for you.
Why does he have to slip a half? I don't understand why he has to slip a half million dollars.
Well, he can. All I'm saying is he can. If he's the coach and he wants to get this thing done and he's got a bank account of $50 million or $100 million, why can't he just take some of his own money, which is illegal? The schools can't pay the kids directly. He's giving it to somebody that runs a company and right. basically telling them to legally be able to induce it to the kid.
Yeah, except coaches have never been guys that come out of their own pockets. That's one of the other things.
But if you're looking at the end game, and the end game is not only am I going to keep my job, but I might be able to get a bigger job. I might be able to get a job for $2 or $3 million a year. You're just betting on yourself at that point and saying, I'm going to make my program relevant. I'm going to fight. I'm at least going to beat all the other schools in my league. I may not beat Kentucky or Duke or the big boys, but if I'm in a mid-major league, yeah, I can outbid everybody else. So why wouldn't they come with me if they're going to make a couple $100,000 as opposed to $10,000.
I think this can really help the mid-majors who are the elite mid-majors. And, like, I don't know if you want to call Creighton a high major, fine. Like, I wouldn't. If I'm a Creighton fan, you can get all you need panties and a while. I don't give a shit. But the fact is that Creighton has an unbelievable fan base, right? They're the Lakers of Omaha.
Yeah.
You're much more likely to benefit name, image, and likeness there. Wichita State. Xavier, Dayton.
Yeah. Compared to Boston College or Miami.
Yeah, yes.
Or USC.
Like Boston College, nobody gives a shit. Now are there alums that could figure something out? Yeah. No, alums could figure something out.
No, not even alums care about BC basketball.
No, there's some alums.
Couple.
I mean, dude, I mean, if Harvard wants to kill it, Harvard can kill it now. Right? All they have to do is like, hey, absolutely. Microsoft is... one guy is Microsoft, one guy is Facebook or whatever, and they could literally pay whatever you want. Whatever you want.
100%. 100%. So I think you're right. You've got the healthy schools with a ton of endowment, a ton of people that boosters, and then you've got the places like Omaha, like where it just runs that school, right?
And there's Gonzaga is a perfect example, right? Gonzaga is a perfect example of that. Yes. I do,
That's right.
It's going to be an amazing, amazing new world. Okay. Last thing. We've all been talking about football and when that gets off, how important do you believe is it for football to start as scheduled so that it doesn't overlap even more with college basketball next year?
I don't care. It doesn't matter. Just play it.
What are you talking about? It doesn't matter.
It goes up against college football. I don't, honestly, it doesn't matter to me. I just think we got to get baseball out first. And then kind of see what happens from there. And that's going to determine whether we get, kids on campus. I think I've heard it from several people lately, like sources, good sources, saying that some of these schools are planning on bringing their kids, their scholarship athletes, to campus for summer school July 1st.
I believe it. West Coast is so much different than and the South is so much different than the East just because we have not been – had the deluge of numbers for COVID-19. Yep. All right, Goody, great stuff. Nice. Check him out on social media or at stadium.com. Thanks so much for joining us.
You got it, man.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
All right, so that's it for this edition of All Ball. I hope you enjoyed it. More to come. And you know what? Do yourself a favor. Do me a favor. Tweet me at Gottlieb Show. You have any thoughts, comments on any of the stuff we talked about today, at Gottlieb Show. Follow us on IG. You can follow us on Twitter, Bird. Or, of course, check me out to the Doug Gottlieb Show on Facebook. And listen, 3-6 Eastern, 12-3 Pacific. The world is not coming to an end. College basketball is not over. I do think that if you continue to lose every year your top 5 to 10 incoming freshmen, and then you lose your top 5 to 10 freshmen that are playing, like now you start to get more and more like college baseball. is college basketball more part of our fabric? It is, but there are additional challenges, and I don't know if the NBA season adjusting their schedule really, really hurts college basketball in the future. We don't know what the NFL schedule looks like, what college football schedule looks like. And to not have had conference tournaments and an NCAA tournament for a year, to continue to lose in public perception, I do think will hurt the sport. The good news is, and this is an important part, it will provide more opportunities, I believe, for players, right? Because, all right, however many players go to the minors, you know, go to the G League, that will open up more scholarships in Division I basketball. And it's not like teams are going down to Division II. So there's still going to be 352-plus teams playing Division I basketball, and you're still going to be 13 scholarships on a team. That's more opportunities for more kids. I think it's more opportunities for more coaches, right? Because the challenge to the G League is, are you really going to keep giving guys their first head coaching job if they're going to be in charge of somebody's player development? That doesn't seem, you want to have veterans, but the more coaches and really maybe G League coaches should come from the college ranks, you know, assistant coaches who have long been development guys who want that opportunity. And it will provide more coaching opportunities for more people. And maybe better recruitment, because instead of having assistant coaches who recruit kind of the old-fashioned way, some programs have moved to the, hey, you got a son? I'll hire you. Or, hey, you got two guys? I'll hire you. Now, this has always occurred, hire one to get one. But it's important to point out that I think that the name, image, and likeness stuff should cut out some of the cheating. Will there be like organized cheating? Sure. Absolutely. You know, you get a bunch of people to pool in some money, and we'll have you do an ad here, and have you do a thing there, have you do an appearance here, and we'll pay you for it there. And maybe you get half of what you're promised, but at least there won't be the true cheating. But it also will eliminate the need to hire somebody's dad, brother, AAU guy as a coach in order to get a player. We don't need to do that anymore. Now we just get them some money from their name, image, and likeness. And maybe that opens up those assistant coaching positions and recruiting positions to the old-fashioned assistant coach recruiter. Just a thought. Anyway, I hope you enjoyed it. I'm Doug Gottlieb, and this is All Ball.